listening to Season 2 of Peace Signs, Stories of Peace, Justice, and Faith at Penn State University, brought to you by Third Way Collective.
So one of the things that I'm curious about is how you can use ideas like, or if you use ideas like dominion, you know, some of the Old Testament ideas about agrarianism and dominion, how those come into a person's, you know, ethic, like a land ethic or something like that. Can you speak to that?
I think I can. I have some hesitancy because I know there are many verses that can be twisted in lots of different ways to make your vision fit. But yeah, and I think my reading of the verses that talk about dominion or ruling over something are shaped again by this central figure of Jesus. And his form of leadership when he came was not about rule over, but empowering from below. It was about servant leadership. It was about leaving everything out on the table for whoever needs it. So, you know, when you read those Older Testament kinds of narratives in the light of the figure who comes later, I think you can only sort of take that then to mean if we're ruling over something, we're doing it with a humble sense of where our place is. If we're ruling over something, it's got to be about multiplying it for all, abundance for all, health for all. It can never be about ruling over in order to manipulate or you know, some of the words that you use to describe the Unitarian sense of being in the world. I think those would all fit really nicely in my understanding of how we treat creation.
I think that both of us, I mean, I referred earlier to dignity and I said that we both have a lot in common with justice. When it comes to how people are impacted by climate change, how do you think being a Mennonite speaks to the different kinds of impacts on people?
Yeah. So Mennonites, a piece of our identity that is not always known is that they're nonviolent people, people of peace, and for many years have been seeking alternatives to military service. So even in some of the most significant wars in our world's history, World War I and II, Mennonites chose to be conscientious objectors and instead served in alternative ways, building roads, rebuilding Europe, farming, being healthcare professionals, to promote peace rather than violence. I say all that to say there's this long tradition of seeking to create something healthy and vibrant in the midst of pain. My grandfather was too young to be drafted in World War II, but he chose to serve after the war had ended by getting on a cattle boat and taking care of livestock as it crossed from North America to Europe, and then giving away these animals to help war-torn parts of Europe that had been devastated by the war. So it was in his mind that, you know, even when other people are kind of destroying it, we got to be working to build it back up again, to make sure that the plants and animals return to help the people of the land sort of refine themselves and whatnot. I don't know if that touches enough on your question or your direction you were thinking
I think
of going
it's,
in.
It's speaking to it through this notion of really huge, like sort of earth-changing things, and that what Mennonites chose to do is say, okay, well, I'm not going to go fight, so I will go and bring peace, stability, and health to people.
Yeah.
And I guess I would imagine that I could infer from that that we could think about that your action
yes.
for, you know, climate justice would be, okay, maybe we are parts of this, there's this big problem that we're all kind of a part of. And, you know, what is the part that I can – carry out mm-hmm. to address it. And that I know by, you know, I guess just by talking to you and some other people that the fact that it disproportionately affects poor people the world right. over is very troubling to you. Yeah. As a Mennonite.
And I think the tradition has given me that message time and time again. One of the things that was born out of World War II was Mennonite Central Committee, which is an international development organization, in part because these people seeking alternative service were being sent out into these really awful places of the world and in terms of the devastation that had occurred there. And started thinking about how do we get people back on their feet. So even today, Mennonite Central Committee sends out waves and waves of Mennonites and non-Mennonites to go and serve and to build a community from its center up, you know, asking the local leaders what is needed, helping to empower them to do the work and to create their vision on the ground. Mm. And then those stories come back to the Mennonite churches of North America, and children like when I was a child hear these stories of, you know, our business practices here, our environmental practices here are hurting the kids in Somalia right now who are going through a drought and desert crisis. Here's how we can, you know, have a lower impact so that their world isn't impacted in the same way that we are. Here's how we can save some of our change from our pockets to donate to their relief efforts. Mm-hmm. So I think I was raised understanding that we take care of our own corners of the world, but we do that so that the large planet is impacted.
Positively.
Right. Positively. And probably because of the cultural identity that I come from of sort of country not being – or country or national civic identity being like far secondary to some sort of spiritual identity – it's been less important to me to have American exceptionalism high up on my values.
Right.
I'm not there saying like, screw the world, let's exploit it to make our country great. I'm sort of over a much different lens of saying, let's figure out how we can make everything work in harmony mm-hmm. and peace.
I would say, from a faith tradition and being from a different nation.
Yeah.
Which is the friendliest nation, right?
I'm sorry.
Right? Canadian jokes. To a nation like the United States, which has a story of exception, you know, incredibly powerful narrative of exceptionalism.
Right.
It's ingrained in our people. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, whether I'm a Unitarian and I, you know, that's not a primary identity for me, but being someone who is a sustainability professional, that much of my message is, if not contrary, certainly challenges
yeah.
the status quo of the United States and some of its, you know, the notion of American prosperity as it's been defined, especially in the last 35 years.
Yeah. You know. Of excess and consumerism.
Yeah. And that's hard. And then, so it's interesting to be in a very secular profession.
Yeah.
That aligns a lot with some of the most deep spiritual, religious, you know, aphorisms that there are.
Yeah.
You know, and how much at odds our larger culture is with its own religious history.
Yeah.
And that I'm in something that seems like, quote unquote, a new idea.
Yeah.
When in most ways, it's really not. It's really ancient. And just has a notion that, well, maybe if we respected limits and one another as a great community, we'd be better off. But that's very hard in this country.
Yeah, especially with history reminding us of how dangerous communism was. You know, there's when you start talking about caring for everyone, it starts sounding like commie, you know, the walls start coming up
right.
about this is dangerous, this is not the way we do things here. people starve as soon as you start saying everyone needs to have the same.
And so what's interesting is that's a narrative of of U.S. exceptionalism and that makes it into a binary that's false.
Right.
And I think what is interesting about what I'm hearing in our conversation is that that can we're sort of coming at a common set of issues of peace and justice and health.
Right.
For the many.
Holistic
health. And that really, right, exactly. Holistic health that calls for us, like, we can't leave things out.
Yeah.
And I would put the land and the climate in there. And you come from a tradition that has, it sounds like, has really embraced all people very well. And so we're sort of working to, it's kind of funny that how that happens, you know?
Yeah. Well, it makes me think too, we're at, speaking of exceptionalism, we are both working at an institution that has an idea of personal, we are Penn State exceptionalism too, that sometimes acts at, you know, it can be this wonderful, thing that generates momentum towards a cause and also kind of glosses over or hides some of our challenges in the same way that American exceptionalism does. I wonder if, I'm guessing a huge part of your work at the Sustainability Institute has to work at that narrative. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm making an assumption there.
No, it depends on who we're talking to. You know, it really does. There's
because some people would see sustainability as part of what makes Penn State the greatest institution, and others would see that as like not even on the table for why we are.
We are a land grant university that is built on service to the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I mean, we were founded by the Morrill Act that was signed by Abraham Lincoln to, you know, bring liberal technical and agricultural education to liberal arts, technical and agricultural education to students and take it out across the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's been true for a really long time. But, you know, so we can talk about agriculture. Agriculture is done in a whole bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
And so what is a sustainable land-grant university? I mean, it's an incredible question.
Yeah, and all those things that you just named are really that gives me a very powerful image of Penn State, but it's often not the first thing that people think of.
They think of football.
Football, great party school, good academic reputation, certainly, but
great engineering.
Great engineering, business program,
And but both of those, I mean, I look at this as kind of a, if I use a kind of critical ethical eye, engineering and business, and this is not a knock on people who are doing these things, they are used to dominate and subjugate the world more than any other sort of sets of endeavors. Business and engineering connected by finance, right? I mean, that is, you know, that's what we're fighting about in the presidential election right now. I mean, it's pretty, it's amazing. And so, you know, here we are at a university where are we being its consciences or something like that? I don't know. That's a whole, I mean, our conversation has already gone pretty far afield, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And how much of your work is, empowered by the culture that we've created here, and how much of it is just like slogging through the mud uphill because of the culture we've created here? Maybe it's both.
It is both.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, sometimes sometimes you make progress and you get knocked back and, but we're, you know, I would say that, I mean, having people knowing that there's someone like you working with students, you know, on their moral and religious development as people, as citizens of this world, spiritual and political citizens, is just incredibly heartening to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel the same sort of tension in that, you know, we are granted permission to do what I want to do here on campus. As long as students keep showing up, we'll continue to have a presence here. But we are one of 65, and we find it very hard to be, you know, in the forefront of what's going on here, because we are a small fringe niche group. And so, yeah, I think I face the same sort of tension that the Sustainability Institute faces, in that without the institution, it wouldn't exist. And because of the institution, your job is made even more difficult. You know, it's this crazy kind of,
yeah, it is. It is. But it is, I think, the work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
You know? Like, what would I be doing if I weren't being paid to do this? I would be finding a way to do this. I've been doing stuff like this for free for a long time, so that an institution provides me with a platform, however small it may be, to do it. You know, in a way that also speaks incredibly well of the institution.
Yep.
You know? And you know, that I get to maybe be some part of its conscience, or you know, help other people sort of, you know, remove the scales from our eyes, knowing that I myself have so many scales that need to come off of my own eyes. Having some humility is also
And knowing that the groups that we get so frustrated by are here because of the same permission granted to us too. I mean, I think that's one of my biggest challenges. I don't like to speak poorly of my colleagues here in the center, but there are people like the Willard Preacher on campus that I just cringe at when I walk by, but he's here for the same, with the same permission essentially that I am to speak his religious conviction in a public space. It's hard, but
Well, I hope that we're providing ways for people to be better members of a democracy.
Yeah, and imagining what that actually looks like. We can talk about that all the time, but what does a conversation look like rather than just aligning all the people who agree with you? What else do we need to talk about?
I don't know, man. This is great. I mean, I think that we've made it.
There's really good stuff here. 40 minutes of
stuff.
It feels like we should maybe wrap by saying, we talked a lot about like our passions, but what is a hope? What does Penn State look like moving forward for you? What's a hope for the future in your field or in your work?
So in my work, or, and I guess as a Unitarian too, I suppose.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, you were one of the signatories of that climate change letter, and you came to the little event that we had, and, you know, Senior Vice President David Gray came out and was a good participant in what we did. You know, I think about an issue like climate change as an example of something of where a lot of sustainability thinking and action is pointed. I would love to see and believe that this university has the ability to achieve a net zero carbon energy mix in 25 years. That the incredible challenge, and therefore also very meaningful challenge, of meeting the of what's been requested from the Paris Agreement to halt emissions such that we don't go over 1.5 degrees centigrade, that we can do that we can really be a part of that if our university, which is, I mean, it's a big institution, but if it turns its incredible mind as this amazing hive mind connected to lots of industry, connected to government, civil society, I mean, it's just, it's amazing that, quote unquote, the energy university, as President Barron is starting to talk about it, can provide an amazing example of how we transformed our own energy and land use in the service of the Commonwealth and the world to be a model for others. And, you know, I think that I really believe that we can do it. I really do. And not with pie in the sky. Like, we don't need some magic supreme technological answer. We need really thoughtful implementation that's focused on the health and well-being of Pennsylvanians, really. And I think we can do that. And it would be nice if we weren't supporting so much military destructive technology. That's it. Yeah. I don't work on that stuff in my job, you know. So as a Unitarian, that's something.
In some sense, we're all guilty as being part of this machine.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, I think my dreams are similar in that there is a lot of I have a lot of hope for all that's present here now, but isn't necessarily working together to do cool stuff. There's a lot of great faith-based groups who just are totally unaware of what the others are doing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great social justice folks as well. Small groups, really passionate groups that just are not connecting. I think my hope is that there would be more synergy in the, you know, we've got 1,000 clubs and organizations.
Oh my gosh.
It's a little bit crazy, but I think there'd be some real power there in terms of transformative thought and ideas if more of them collaborated on projects together, or even were just aware.
Yeah.
Cross promotion and things like that too, I think would be huge.
But yeah, connectors are really important right now.
I think so. And some institution people who hold the stories of what Penn State is being along the way to say, have you heard of this other group? Before you go starting something new, why don't you go and see if they need help with what they're doing? Cool.
Well, thanks, Ben.
Absolutely. Thank you. Peace Signs is a project of Third Way Collective, committed to Christ-centered peace, justice, and faith at Penn State University. To find out more and to lend your voice, like us on Facebook, follow on Twitter, or visit us at thirdwaycollective.org.